Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Do you like beer and history and strange and unusual facts? If you don't, I probably can't help you. But I know somebody who can. The history of Germany, Bohemican, the history of alchemy, and the secret cabinet are all podcasts on the top of my playlist. These podcasts are so well researched, and Pete and Travis are so genuinely interested. These shows are really education and entertainment combined in the best possible way. Travis isn't afraid to veer off the path of the standard narrative and talk about some of the more offbeat and colorful history that makes listening so much more fun. I'm Steve, and I host and create A2Z History Page Presents the History of the Papacy. My show looks at the history of the popes of Roman Christian Church. I like to explore how the office of Pope in the Christian Church in general evolved over the course of centuries and millennia. I try to feature some of the more colorful and unusual aspects of the Christian history story as well. So if you like to step over the ropes and go where the tour normally doesn't go, you can find out more and subscribe at a2zhistorypage.com. Back to Travis.
Thanks, Steve. Kind words indeed. And I am also a listener of the History of the Papacy podcast. So go have a listen. Welcome to the History of Germany podcast. I'm Travis Dow. And there's also, if you like the Bohemican podcast, which is a history podcast about Bohemian Czech history and culture, there's videos out there now. So go check out the Bohemican podcast YouTube channel. And all that stuff's on podcastnik.com. That's podcastnik.com. Anyways, back to the History of Germany podcast. Now, the first two bridges on record across the Rhine River were built by Julius Caesar. And so this is a kind of a good point to slow down and give you a brief geography lesson. This will probably be even briefer in the German version. Now, if you want a great geographic overview of Europe in history podcast format, Ben from Wittenberg to Westphalia podcast has that. He's on episode 9 right now, and he's still just kind of going over the geography of Europe region by region. So all the Rhine River like region and all of that is described on his podcast. And there's even a great guest episode in there, by the way, too, on episode 7 on Jan Hus. That's a great episode on Wittenberg to Westphalia podcast. Anyways, the Rhine is important. Up until now in the show, it has been Caesar's border between Celts on the west and Germanic tribes on the east. That already makes it kind of important to Caesar and then therefore to the Romans. And we now know that that was far from the truth. If anything, I've been spending the last 10 episodes trying to explain how the Rhine is not just a border between two different cultures. But now it became the truth. So Caesar started to make it the truth. It was a boundary for a while even of the Roman Empire, and then it separated Gaul from Germania. And centuries later, it was again the boundary. After Charlemagne's son Louis the Pious died, it became the boundary between the kernels of what would become France and Germany, except that Charlemagne's empire was split into three parts, with Lorraine, or Middle Francia, went to Lothar the First, or which became Lotharingia, and now Lorraine. Anyways, that's the whole like Alsace region that's will be important for the History of Germany show. Now the Alsace region is on the French side. It's, you know, and it's on the west side of the Rhine and it's French now. But it was Germany many times, Prussian, all that stuff. But it was also part of Middle Francia, Lotharingia, And basically, the Germans were never quite sure if the Rhine should really be the border. I mean, it was kind of ambiguous then, too. And that region did go back and forth many times, you know, many wars, like the Franco-Prussian War, World Wars. It was part that's the part of region, that's the part of land that was protected by the Maginot Line before World War II. So to Caesar, like to many others, it was a boundary. And the last episode, we saw Caesar mop up and clean up on the west side of the Rhine. He finished subduing the various Belgian tribes, and the Suebi had all gone to the east side of the Rhine, which, you know, we discussed in the very last part of the last episode. The last episode was all about Caesar fighting the Suebi, and we talked about how important Suebi was. Suebi, you know, could mean German for hundreds of years after this. So anyways, Caesar kicked them all to the other side of the Rhine, where Caesar thought they belonged. But the Germans felt too safe on the right side of the Rhine. They conducted raids across the river and then, you know, would escape back to safety. And then, now, all of this, according to Caesar himself, basically our only real source here, and you can go read it, it's not very long, Caesar's description of the bridge and his campaigns here. Basically, what happened is some tribes started picking on the Ubians who were allied to Rome, or Ubians. So basically, to secure the new border of Gaul, Caesar decides to cross the Rhine. Now, the reason Germans felt safe is that the Rhine is huge. It's about a kilometer wide at its kind of, you know, just before the delta, but even upstream at the point where Caesar wanted to cross, it was still 500 meters. Now, in 500 BC, Caesar decided boats just wouldn't do it. He would make a spectacle out of it. He would build a bridge. And he did that in 10 days. And then he tore it down. And then he did it again in 53 BC, 2 years later. This wasn't just out of practicality of moving troops across safer. This was a message to the Germans, and also back home. He doesn't just win wars, but he can also conquer his surroundings through, you know, Roman engineering. And he did that. The Ubians even offered boats, but according to himself, part of the reason was just that it was his style. Now, if you want to find the spot exactly where the first bridge was built, it's hard to say exactly, but somewhere between Andernach and Neuwied, downstream of Koblenz on the Rhine River. And his writing gives details of kind of the material and that it's a wooden beam bridge with double timber pilings that were kind of rammed into the bottom of the river by winching up this large stone and then releasing it over and over, like, you know, kind of like a hammer. And that, you know, that would drive the supporting posts, basically the pilings, into the riverbed. And I watched to kind of get a picture of this. There's a BBC documentary out there if you want to see this in action. They build a slightly scaled, I think it's like 60% or 40% of the original build bridge, but it's still really big, and they tried their best to use Roman architecture and methods, and Caesar wasn't very precise on all the details. So there's a lot of room for interpretation, and there's many different modern designs of bridge. But anyways, it's a, you know, if you want to actually see what I'm talking about, like what it looks like, there's documentaries out there. You can see a visual image of this being reconstructed. And they commented on and interpreted on Caesar's, you know, pretty vague description of what he did. And then they attempted to build the same cranes, you know, to hammer in the pilings and all that. It all seemed pretty authentic. And they also tried to do it in a shorter time frame since it's a shorter bridge. It's a good watch if you're interested. But basically, the pilings were all at an angle. This is in Caesar's works, in his writings. It's kind of a cross beam between them, and then the branches on top for decking to form basically the street. Now, the pilings are at an angle, so, you know, to go against and with the current. So basically, the stronger the current, the more pressure is on that cross beam. So the stronger the bridge, it just kind of pushes itself together. It's, you know, it's pretty cool engineering. So basically, the most upstream and downstream pilings were slanted and secured by a beam. And then multiple segments of these kind of linked up and formed the basis of the bridge. Now, a good estimate of the overall length and everything said and done, the bridge is said to be about 400 meters. Like, he found it, you know, there's a couple narrower spots, and about 8 meters wide. And the depth of the river can reach up to 9.1 meters or 30 feet. So pretty long pilings were needed. And they used an oak for this, that in Europe, some of the oaks grow really straight and tall. That these days would probably cost a fortune. The first bridge he had, he did have the manpower to do it. So it's just, you know, that was on his side. He had 40,000 soldiers to use. And so he was able to do this in 10 days. He crossed with his men, and then they kind of burned some villages, specifically those of the Sugambri and Suebi, and which are the tribes he was after. Most of the people, though, had actually retreated further into the forest. When, you know, as soon as they saw him start to build this bridge across the Rhine, they took off. And the Romans, or let's say Caesar, of course, interpreted this as a cowardly retreat at, you know, the site of awesome Roman engineering. But this was really tactical. So the tribes kind of gave themselves time to gather before confronting Caesar. And when Caesar found out that the Germans were indeed gathering, he went back across his bridge and took the bridge down behind him. Now, he called his 18-day venture without any battles a victory, because he did burn a village or two. But that didn't quite stop the Germans. That showed them that he could cross once, you know, now and then. But it didn't really stop them from doing their raids in boats across the river. So 2 years later, it came to a point where Caesar decided to do this again. And pretty close to the site of the first bridge, possibly at today's Urmitz, near Neuwied, Caesar erected a second bridge. They might have found some remains, but probably not. I think the wood they found were all from the Middle Ages. But anyways, you know, that's... Maybe we'll find out more about this in a couple of years. But basically, the second bridge, he wasn't as exact with how long it took him. He just wrote in a few days. And then his expeditionary forces raided the countryside, but did not encounter any significant opposition as the Suebi again retreated into the woods. And upon returning to Gaul, the bridge was again taken down. Now, the strategy behind this, because he didn't really do any conquering, he didn't take over any of the, you know, Germania at that point. Later on, you know, a century or two later, I'll talk about this in this podcast, when parts of Germany were conquered by the Romans, and the Roman Empire then shaped a lot of the culture of who the Germans became in many ways. But, you know, so this is... kind of the first, or, you know, some of the really first encounter of Romans inside on the east of the Rhine. And there's another encounter coming up here that doesn't go so end so well for the Romans. But the Romans have a really interesting history on the east side of the Rhine, so we'll definitely get into that. For now, Caesar's strategy worked. He was able to secure the eastern border, like the Gaulish part. And he demonstrated that Roman power could easily, and at will, cross the Rhine, that it really wasn't a natural hindrance at all. And from now on, for several centuries, significant Germanic incursions across the Rhine stopped. So, you know, again, mission accomplished, really, even though he didn't do much. And really what probably, you know, what his goal really was, that he definitely accomplished, was that this feat kind of served him as establishing his fame at home. It's just one of the things that gets a whole podcast episode 2,000 years later dedicated to this one thing. That is how cool it was. It really was an engineering feat and a statement. Whatever it was, it definitely worked. So that's why I'm talking about it now. Now, if you're trying to find the exact location, you're not going to, basically no one can really agree on where it is exactly. All the little towns around there, like Neunach and Neuwied, or Andernach and Neuwied, they found residual pilings, and of course, you know, just because of the tourist aspect of it, they all want that to be the authentic site. But so far, I think most of the wooden beams that have been examined are all date from medieval times. But I don't know. I found an alternate site south of Bonn mentioned. So in any case, you're not going to, you know, you can't go and see exactly where Caesar built the bridge. Maybe someday they are really curious about it. So there's always excavations being done there. So maybe in a couple of years I can update this episode, but until now you're not going to find it. Now this wasn't that doesn't really matter to me, but what's fascinating though is the effect. Now the Suebi just scattered and ran when they saw the Romans cross the Rhine. Not the Suebi as Ariovistus. In fact, the demonstration of engineering would keep the Germans on their side of the Rhine for a generation. And if you think about a generation, it's only been half that time since, like, the Berlin Wall fell and the Cold War ended. And, well, more than half. I guess I'm kind of getting old. But it's a huge difference for the region. You know, one generation where that border that really does exist. My point is, crossing the Rhine was now defining the Rhine as a definitive border. The blurry edges between Celts and Germans start to go away. Celts everywhere started to Romanize, starting with under the leadership of Augustus. So really just one generation after Caesar, the Celts had been in the Roman Empire for a whole generation. Now there was definitely differences between them and the Germans. And just a couple generations before, like I said in the last episodes, it was all intermarriages and really blurry lines. Now we start to see a border. Some of the Germans, even on the border areas close to the Rhine, also started to change. And also in the south of Germany, where the blurring was kind of heavier anyways, then, you know, some of the Germans started to Romanize along with this. But definitely not as much as the Celts. And now we start to say that the non-Romanized people were Germans and the Romanized ones were Gauls and Belgae and all that. So, you know, now there's definitely a distinction there. And eventually, they would cross the Rhine more permanently, like I mentioned. There would be Roman colonization of the Rhine Valley. There'd be more permanent bridges, stone bridges, like the ones at Castra Vetera at Xanten, or Colonia Claudia Ara Agrippinensium, which is now known as Cologne or Köln. And then there's Confluentis or Koblenz and Moguntiacum, I think, which is Mainz now, just the city of Mainz. So all of those were founded as Roman colonies. I mean, Cologne, you know, the word comes from colonia, colony. So there's a lot of history here, and because that is definitely history of Germany, so we will talk about Germans in the Roman Empire, but not yet. First, we have to take a step back. We're not there yet. A generation after Caesar, Romans would try to cross the Rhine again, this time for conquest. And now let's see how that turns out in the Battle of Teutoburg Forest. That will be next time on the History of Germany podcast. This podcast is a part of the History Podcasters Network. The network recently published a collage, the Alcohol Collage Part 2, which all these history podcasters get together and we do this. And this episode, there was from the show Last Stop to Nowhere with Michael Sloan and Kyle Scherer, and the History of Alchemy podcast by myself and my co-host Pete Coleman, and the History of Papacy podcast, which I highly recommend, by Stephen Guerra. Those were all in this Alcohol Collage Part 2. The History of Alchemy, we talked about distillation and alchemy's role. It's really interesting. I think it's a good show. So anyways, don't forget about the new show, The Secret Cabinet. The English version has some 6, 7, 8, 9 episodes up. It's all German weird stuff. Things that, you know, historic artifacts that they would not display in museums because of obscenity or vulgarity or pornographic material or that kind of thing. But I talk about it in a very decent and civil way. So the German version of that show has 35 or more episodes out already. And I'm, again, just translating the German version to the English, so it's kind of lagging behind. But if you want to see what's coming up, look at the German feed. Anyways, you can find all those shows and links and all the videos on podcastnik.com. That's podcastnik.com. Thank you very much.
Hold up. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.